Good morning, everybody. Today's daf is Daf Tzadi. We'll pick up on Pei Tes Amid Beis. It's about 13 lines up from the bottom. Last word of the line, Lema. So we're discussing, we brought up yesterday's daf, Takanas Usha. And what we said was in Usha, they were metakin, that if a woman, Haisha Shemachra B'nichse Milug B'chai Bala, if we have a case where a woman has her Nichse Milug property, which is the property she brings into the marriage, that the husband has the ability and the right to use the property during the time of the marriage, but after the marriage, the property reverts back and goes to the woman. So in Usha, they made a takana that with that type of property, if the woman during the marriage tries to sell that property, the husband can go ahead and take that property from the lekuchos, from the buyer, because what Rashi brings down there is that the husband, we're trying to keep a harmonious relationship between the parties, and so what Rabbanan did was they elevated the husband's status so that even though the wife is really the true owner and she's going to be the one that's going to get the property at the end of the marriage, because the husband has the right to use the property during the marriage, they elevated his power and his status there, that he would then be able to pull back from the lekuchos because they treated him as an actual buyer, even though he only has the use of the property now, since potentially he could inherit the whole property. We treated him as a buyer right now. So now we're going to discuss further within Takanas Usha. So back on Pei Tes Amid Beis. Lema Takanas Usha Tanai. So we want to say that the idea of whether we do or do not accept this Takanas Usha Lehalacha, let's say that is a Machlokas Tanai. The Tani Chada, we have two brises. One brise says, Avdei milug yotzim b'shein v'ayin le'isha avalo le'ish. So we know the halacha is by an eved kanani. If the master of the eved knocks out his tooth or his eye, the master goes free. The eved goes free. So the question is, if we have avdei milug, we have avadim that the woman brought into the marriage that are her property. And so now you have a situation where the husband is the one who has the right to use the avadim right now during the marriage, and the wife has the true ownership, the principal ownership of the avadim, and she's going to get them back after the marriage. So the question is, who is considered the master, that if that person were to knock out the eved's tooth or eye, the eved would go free? So the first brisa says, Avdei milug yotzim b'shein v'ayin le'isha aval lo le'ish. Says, if the wife knocks out the shein v'ayin of the eved, even during the marriage, or this is specifically during the marriage, then that's going to cause the woman to go free. But not a man. But if the man goes ahead and he's the one, even though he has the right to use the eved, if the man knocks out the eved's tooth or eye, the eved would not go free. If you look in Rashi, v'shein v'ayin le'isha, right across, hipila hi esheino v'sima esheino. So if the woman knocks out his eye, the eved's eye or tooth, the eved goes free. Avalo le'ish sima ba'la esheino eved o hipila esheino. If the husband is the one who knocks out the shein of the ayin, lo yase l'cheres l'fi she'ein gufo kanuilai, because he doesn't have the actual possession of the guf of the slave. He only has the right to use the peros during the time of the marriage. Second brisa, back in the Gemara, v'tani idach, we have another brisa that says the opposite, lo le'ish v'lo le'isha. No, neither party, neither the husband nor the wife, if either of them knock out a shein v'ayin, the eved still does not go free. Neither of them have sufficient ownership to be called the master to knock out, to fall under the halacha of shein v'ayin by an eved. So the Gemara continues, savruha, t'kuliyama kinyan peros, lav kinyan gutan. So the way we have to understand these two brisos is that all parties agree that kinyan haperos are not like kinyan haguf. The husband in this case is one of the kinyan haperos. Kinyan haperos is just the right to use the object. Kinyan haguf is the actual ownership of the object, which is what the wife has. So everyone agrees that the husband does not have sufficient bilis to knock out to have the eved go free if he knocks out the shein v'ayin. And that's why, according to both brisos, the husband knocking out a shein v'ayin of the eved is not going to cause the eved to go free. My lab bakum. But they're arguing about whether the woman's knocking out of a shein v'ayin is enough to have the eved go free. So what? This must be the machlokas. Demanda amar li'isha. According to the first brisa, who said that if the wife knocks out a shein v'ayin of the eved goes free, must be less like Takana Susha. Must be they do not hold of Takana Susha. Because what did Takana Susha do? It elevated the husband's status. Normally the husband only has Kinyan Peros, and that wouldn't be considered enough bilus, but they elevated the husband's status enough that it limits the wife's ability to sell in a general case. And in this case, because we're limiting the wife's ownership in some capacity, that must be enough that the woman's knocking out a shein v'ayin would not be considered her to be the master enough to send the eved free. And so, according to the first brisa, who held that a woman's knocking out a shein v'ayin does cause the eved to go free, it must be that opinion does not hold of Takanas Usha and never strengthens the power of the husband and in effect limiting the power of the woman. Umanda amar lo li'ish v'lo li'isha, but according to the second brisa, that neither the husband nor the wife has the ability to set the eved free by knocking out a shein v'ayin, then isla takanas usha, that must be that opinion does hold up takanas usha, and because takanas usha limits the power of the wife does not have enough bilus, and she would not, and her knocking out of a shein v'ayin would not have the eved go free. Okay, so we think, so it seems like it is machlokas tanayim in these two brisos. So Mar comes along with three answers. First answer. Lo, the kula alma islu takanas usha. No, really, everybody, both brisos hold the opinion of takanas usha that the husband's bilus is strengthened, and therefore the woman's knocking out of shein v'ayin doesn't set the eved free. Ela kan kodem takana kan achar takana. Okay, just it's a matter of timing. The first brisa, which said that the woman knocking out a shein v'ayin would set the eved free, that is before takanas usha was enacted. The second brisa, which says neither the husband nor the wife can set the eved free, that is going to be after takanas usha. Okay, second answer. Levi seima. No, both of these opinions, we say both prices are still talking about a case where Takanas Usha is in full effect. This lu Takanas Usha. So why do we have a difference in the two prices? Why in one can the woman set the eved free, and the woman's actions cannot? Ella lemand amar leisha velo leish. According to the brisa, that the woman's actions can set the eved free. My taima, kidurava, the reason why she holds it is a special din, a special set of dinim that we have. To Amarava, back on Sadi, or now on Sadi Yamad Aleph at the top. Hegdesh chametz v'shichror mafkiyan mideshibud. So we have the concept, and we've had this before in Yevamos and Exubos, that if we have any of these things happen, either you are makdish something or Pesach comes and something becomes chametz, or shechrur, you set an eved free. Mafkiyan midei shibud. In any of these cases, if any of these things happen to an item that has a shibud on it, it knocks up the shibud. Rashi is going to lay out the three cases for us. So let's see the top one. Hegdesh. Asa shara apotiki lebal chovo. Let's say somebody has a debt, and in order to repay that debt, he gives, a potiki is a lien on metaltalin. So he takes, so let's say he has a shore, and he gives the lender a lien on this particular shore. The chazer lo vazeh v'kedishu, kedushu the gofim mizbeach. And let's say now the borrower goes ahead and takes this shore that he's put a lien on to pay back this debt, and he makes it hegdish. So in that case, hifkia shibuda de milva. In this case, the owner, the actual owner of the shore, the borrower, is allowed to make this shore hegdesh, and by doing so, that removes the apotiki lien that the lender has, and this is a full-fledged hegdesh animal. Shekoach hegdesh mafkio. Since it's only here as an element of a collection, and there's no actual ownership of the lender on it. It's just a lien. The hegdesh, the idea of consecrating something and making it hegdesh, knocks out that lien, and you still owe money. The borrower still has to pay back his debt, but the lender no longer has any metalton object that he can collect from, or specific metalton object he can collect from if the debtor doesn't pay back. So that's the first one. Second Rashi chametz. It's about five lines down in the narrow lines. Nachri shehilva es Yisrael al chametzo. Say a Jew borrows money from a non-Jew, and in return he sets aside chametz items that he could use and give a lien to the non-Jew to pay back. Velohar hinu eslo. But in this case, the borrower does not give the chametz items over to the non-Jewish lender. The mechusar gavayu. So in this, the mechusar guvina. So it's still lacks the full collection. The items are still sitting in the house of the Jew. Now the Nachri only has a lien on taking those items. When the time of Bir Chametz comes, that Chametz is reverted back to some extent into the Jew's possession, and he has to get rid of it like any other chametz, even though it is mishabed to, or it was mishabed to the non-Jew. And in this case, the iser chametz is what is mafkia, is what removes that lien of the non-Jewish lender. And the final case, which is relevant for us, is shichrur. A little further down, shichrur asa avdo apotiki v'shichruhu halove v'shichrur v'govazachovu mimakom acher. So again, similar case. You have someone borrows money and gives the lender an apotiki lien on an eved, and then wants to go ahead and that the borrower now wants to go ahead and free the eved. The borrower can go ahead and free the eved, and that the eved is not still meshubad to that lender. The eved goes free. You still have to pay back the loan, but the shichrur takes effect. So we want to say here is the same idea, is that what's happening in our case, it's not an optional or an elective shechur. The wife is not going ahead and freeing the slave. However, she is in effect being meshachar the slave because she knocks out his shein v'ayin. And so what's happening is even though we have takanas usha, and the husband does have a stronger, somewhat of a lien as a lokeach on this eved, because the wife is going ahead to be meshachar the eved, and she's freeing him by knocking out a shein v'ayin, that shichur knocks out the lien of the husband. So even though he holds up the takanas usha, that's why this first brisa, who said that the woman can knock out a shein v'ayin and set the eved, and the eved would go free, they must hold of this opinion, this idea of Rava, that being meshachar and eved is one of those items that would destroy an existing lien, which in this case the husband has because of the takanas usha. So the Gemara questions though, lema de Rava tanahi. So now we're saying that this din of Rava, we thought this din of Rava is a pretty established din, that hegdesh, chametz, and shichrur are enough to be mafkia a lien on metaltalin, or not necessarily metaltalin, but also on avadim. So are we saying now, we didn't want to say takanas usha is a machlokas tanaim, but now we're going to say that the din of Rava is a machlokas tanaim within these two prices? So Gemara says, not low. Tukuliyama islu de Rava. Everybody does hold of the idea of Rava, that shechur is something that can destroy a lien. However, v'hacha amur rabbanan l'shibuda habal. But here, the second brisa, which held that neither the husband nor the wife's actions of knocking out a shein v'ayin will be enough to set the eved free, they hold that not only did the Takanas Usha come and give a stronger lien to the husband, but it gave such a strong lien that even Rava would say a shichrur in this case would not be enough to knock off this extra strong lien, Takanas Usha. So they all hold to this principle of Rava, but it is a machlokas of how strong is the lien of Takanas Usha. Is it strong enough that it even knocks out this din of Rava that that a shichrur would be enough to be mafkia an existing shibud? Okay, so that was answer number two. Again, with to say that Takanas Usha is not a machlokas tanaim. Now the third answer. Ibai Seima, the Kuleyama less lulai tanai Takanas Usha. Really, we're going to go the opposite way. Neither of these two tanaim hold of Takanas Usha. So that makes sense for the first brisa. The first brisa, which held that the woman's actions of knocking out a shein v'ayin would set the eved free because there's no Takanas Usha. What about the second brisa that said neither the husband nor the wife's actions of knocking out a shein v'ayin would set the eved free. Hacha b'kinyan peros k'kinyan guf dami kameflagi. Really, this is an argument on machlokas we brought up yesterday, even before we get to Takanas Usha, of whether a kinyan peros even has any type of kinyan haguf. We had a machlokas Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan. We hold like Reish Lakish, but in this case, these two Tanaim are having machlokas, are still arguing on whether the husband's kinyan peros has any sort of level of bilus. And if you hold that kinyan haperos lavka kinyan haguf tami, like Reish Lakish, which is what we say la halacha, then the husband's kinyan haperos, his ability to use the eved during the marriage, is not any real ownership, and so the wife is the full fledged owner. So her knocking out shame lets the eved go free. However, if you hold that kinyan haperos kicking in a goat dummy, and so the husband does have some actual form of ownership. So that is enough. Again, what we're saying is the husband's form of ownership is not enough that it would set the eved free, but it is enough to limit the wife's ownership. And so if the wife knocks out a shein v'ayin, the eved would not go free. So, so there's three ways of understanding whether there is machlokas tanaim on takanas usha or not. And now once we're on the idea of kinyan peros, kinyan haguf dami or not, we're gonna apply that machlokas to other cases as well. We've looked at the hani tonight, and this machlokas of kinyan peros, kinyan haguf is also machlokas tonight elsewhere. Titania. Brisa tells us hamocher avdo laacher upasaki imo amenashim shenu shloshim yom. You have a case where someone is selling an eved, but as part of the sale, The seller says, I'm going to retain the use of this eved for 30 days. He's not delaying the sale 30 days. The sale takes effect immediately, but it's almost like a situation where somebody's selling his house and they want to rent it back for the beginning period. They don't have another house to go into. So the sale takes effect right away, but the seller in this case is keeping the use of the eved for 30 days. So now what do we have? We've just created the same case that we just talked about of a husband and a wife with avdei milug, right? Because we have a case here where the ownership is fully transferred, so the buyer is the full owner of this eved. However, the seller has rights to use the eved within 30 days. So during this 30-day period, we have the seller with kinyan peros, the right to use, and we have the buyer already with kinyan aguf, already the official owner of the eved. So now we have a four-way machlokas of what happens. So, one item to note here that to give a little background, in general, if the owner of somebody kills the eved. So in general, in a case of misa, if somebody delivers a blow to somebody, and let's say it still takes 30 days, 45 days before the person dies, as long as halakhically we determine that the cause of the death was that initial blow, it doesn't matter if it's 2 days later, if it's 30 days later, if it's a year later, you would be chayav misa, because you caused death. It doesn't have to be done within a certain period of time. However, the pasuk tells us by a slave, the pasuk says, if a master strikes an eved and kills him, the master is killed. You know, regular din misa. The next pasuk says, "Achim yom o yomayim ya'amod lo yukam ki kaspahu." However, if the eved doesn't die for yom o yomayim, which we translate as just, it's really one day, it's a 24-hour period, it's just, it needs to be a full 24-hour period. If the eved doesn't die within that first 24-hour period, even if he dies later and he dies because of the injuries, there is a special gzeres hakasuv, there is no din misa, but that only applies to the owner of the slave. So that's what's important to know. We want to find out who is the owner of the slave vis-a-vis this din of yom o yomayim for, in this case, a leniency of not being chayv misa if the eved does not die within that first 24-hour period. So, four-way machlokas. Back in the Gemara, Rav Meir Omer, Rishon, Yeshno b'din yom yomayim, epnei shu tachtov. So the first person, in this case the seller, who is the one who's using the eved, so according to Rav Meir, he has the din of yom yomayim, because the Eved is actually under his control right now, he's the one who's using the Eved, and so therefore, if he hits the Eved and the Eved doesn't die within 24 hours, that the seller, the first person, is not Chayv Rishon. So Kasavar must be, what does Reb Meir hold? Kinyan Peros, Kinyan Aguftami. Because the first person, the seller, only right now has a Kinyan Peros, just a right to use the object, he must be considered like still the true owner, and he falls within the Gzeres HaKasav of Yom HaYomayim. Reb Yehuda Omer, Reb Yehuda says, Sheini Yeshto Bedin Yom HaYomayim. No, only the second person, only the buyer, who is the actual full guf owner of the slave, only he has the din of Yom HaYomayim, the Pneju Kaspo, because who is the true owner? Who's Kesef is he? The Pasuk says, or if you look at the actual words of the Pasuk, it says, Lo Yukam Ki Kaspo Hu. The owner does not get punished because it is his Kesef, it's his property. Whose property is it? It's the property of the buyer because the transaction already took effect. Kasavar, what is this? What is Rehu the hold? Kinyan Peros, Laka Kinyan Guftami, must be that the first person, the seller, because he only has the right to use the Eved, is not considered an owner of the Eved, does not fall within the Gzeres HaKasav, and if that first person within those 30 days were to hit the Eved and it took 2 days, 3 days for the Eved to die, that first person would still be Chayav Misa, he would not get the exemption, the Gzeres HaKasav, of Yom HaYomayim. So those two opinions are what line up our machlokas that we talked about before of Kinyan Peros, Kinyan HaGuftami, or not. Now we have two other opinions that are brought down. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi says, Shneim Yeshnim B'din Yom HaYomayim. No, both of them will get the benefit of Yom HaYomayim from the Pasuk. Why? Seve Pnei Shehu Tachtav, the first person, the seller, gets the exemption of Yom HaYomayim because the Eved is actually under his control. He has the right to use the Eved. Vezeve Pnei Shehu Kaspo, and the second, the buyer, because he actually is the owner of the slave, then he also gets the exemption of Yom HaYomayim. Why? And what's the reasoning? Misafkale, Rabbi Yossi had a suffix. Kinyan Peros, Ika Kinyan HaGuftami, Ilaka Kinyan HaGuftami. So Rabbi Yossi was unsure whether Kinyan Peros is considered a Kinyan HaGuf. So whether the first person, the seller, really is still considered an owner to some extent because he has this Kinyan Peros. And therefore, Misafik Nefashat LaHakel, because we're talking about a case where the owner would potentially be Chayv Misa. So we have an issue of Nefashos. And when we're Mesapek, whether the owner should be killed or not, we do go Safi Nefashos LaHakel. And so both the seller and the buyer would fall within the exemption of Yom HaYomayim by an Eved. So that's opinion number three. Rabbi Elazar Omer, fourth opinion. Shnehem Einan B'dim Yom HaYomayim. So Rabbi Elazar takes the stance that neither of them would be able to fall within the exemption of Yom HaYomayim. Why? Zelafisha Eino Tachtav. So the second one, the buyer, because the owner, the Eved, is actually not within his possession right now. Zelafisha Eino Kaspo. And the seller, the first person, does not get the exemption of Yom HaYomayim because he's not the actual owner of the slave. He only has a Kinyan Peros. So Amar Rava, Rava gives us a little bit more understanding of what's Rabbi Eliezer's position. My time is Rabbi Eliezer. Amar Kra, Ki Kaspohu, Kaspoham Yuchadlo. So he takes the Gzeres HaKasav very literally. Since the Pasuk said, Lo Yukam Ki Kaspohu, because it has to be Kesef, he says it's not just any level of Kesef, but it has to be Kaspoham Yuchadlo. It has to be specific Kesef that is only owned by one person, only, and someone has to have the Kinyan HaPeros and the Kinyan HaGuf together, and in this case, because we have a split ownership, we have one person with the right to use and one person with the true ownership rights, so neither one would be able to fall within the parameters of the Pasuk, and neither one would get the exemption of Yom O Yomayim. Okay, so again, four-way machlokas in this case. So now we're going to bring in two more cases, and we want to know which of these Tanaim would it align with. So, Kaman, Azla, Had, Amar, Amemar. So who of these four opinions would we be able to fit in this din of Amemar? Amemar says, Ish of Isha, Shenachru b'nichse milug. Let's say, we've been talking about a case where we have a woman brings nichse milug property into a marriage, and then she goes ahead and tries to sell her remainder interest to a third party. Let's say the husband and wife are together on this. They say, you know, there's this nichse milug property, we need the money, or, you know, we don't need this property anymore. We're going to go ahead together and make a joint sale. The husband's going to throw in his peros rights. The woman will throw in her remainder guf rights, and they'll make a valid sale. So why not go ahead, and it's like two partners, and go ahead and sell it together. What does a Amemar say? If that happens, lo asu velo klum. So nothing, that sale does not take effect. Basically, according to a Maimar, Nisa Milu property, there is no ability to sell it. Because even if you get both parties, the husband and the wife together, they can't go ahead and sell it. Come on, so who's that like? Say, Rabbi Eliezer must be like the final opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. And who in the case of an Eved being an Adon killing, one of the parties killing the Eved within that 30-day period, neither one of them gets the exemption of Yomi Yomayim because he holds this concept of Kaspo, Kesef HaMiyuchad, though. You have to have full ownership rights of Kesef. But let's look at Rashi, because this is a little bit confusing, because we would think this is analogous to a case of Shutfin, right? If I have two partners, each of them own half a piece of land, you know, we wouldn't say that land is not sellable. You know, if the two parties get together and want to sell to a third party, they should be able to sell it. So Rashi brings down, Rashi says, lo asuv lo klum, she'enu lo lezeh v'lo lezeh. In this case of a husband and a wife, neither of them have enough ownership rights. V'meis echad mehen, zeh nishar motzi midei l'kuchos, right, so that sale is invalid and either one of them could pull back from the kuchos. V'lo damu l'shutfen da'alma, but this is not analogous to a regular shutfen case. To hasam, in the case of shutfen, yesh lezeh chelak b'kulo litol chatzi v'chein lezeh. So both of them have full ownership rights, Guf and Peros, of half of the land. And since we have each of them have a full ownership right, they can combine together regular shutfin and sell the property. Aval hacha kulan kenuyalon leguf vekulan kenuyalon leperos velekam yuchad lo lezeh velo lezeh. However, in this case, the husband has full rights of all the Peros, the wife has full rights of all the guf, and neither one of them has any full ownership. When we say full ownership, use and, you know, real principal ownership, neither one of them has that on any piece of the property. So even if they combine, no one has this full ownership rights that have both use and true principal ownership components. And therefore, according to Amemar, which I'm not sure if we hold by this, but according to Amemar, they can never sell this Nefsa Milog property. Okay, that was the first case. Now we have another case. We want to see who do we align up with in our brisa. So mantana l'hadutan rabbanan mishechetzio eved vechetzio ben chorin. Let's say you have a slave that is half free and half slave v'chein eved shel shnei shutfin, or if you have a slave that is owned by two partners ein yotzin barashe evaren she'en chozer. So we have a concept that not only Shein Va'ayin, but the Gemara learns out that, you know, there's 24 Rashi Evarim that if a master knocks out from the Eved, the Eved would go free. So let's say you have a case of an Eved that's an Eved of Shutfin, or an Eved that's Chatzi Ben Chor and Chatzi Eved, and the master goes ahead, or one of the masters in the case of Shutfin, or the regular master in the case of Chatzi Ben Chor and Chatzi Eved, and knocks out one of the Rashi Evarim. Amar le Rav Mordechai le Rav Ashi, Hachi Amar Shmei de Rava Rabbi Yezer. So he says the name of Rava, that this is also the opinion of Rabbi Yezer. Milamar Rabbi Yezer Kaspa Hamiyuchalo. Doesn't Rabbi Yezer hold this concept that it needs to be a full fledged kesef from Xerza Kasef of the pasuk? So that applies not only in a case of Shein V'ayim, but also it applies in a case of Rashi Evarim. So that one aligns pretty easily with what we had in our Brisa, with the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. Okay. Now, back to Inyane Baba Kama, new Mishnah. Hatokel Chavero. So if somebody, and Rashi gives two pshatim, either hit somebody in the ear, or he you know, make a loud noise in somebody's ear. We had this case earlier. No sin lo sela. The Tanakama holds you have to give that person a sela. And Rashi points out here what we're talking about is boshes payments. So all these cases, if there's actual damage, that's going to be separate nezek payment. This mishnah is only dealing with boshes payments. In addition to any nezek, there is what standard, you know, I guess, fixed amount of boshet payments we have for certain activities. So if you hit someone in the ear or you blow in their ear, or not really blowing, really making a loud sound in their ear, you have, according to Tadakama, you have to give them a sela, which is the equivalent of four zuz. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Mishum Rabbi Yosi Aglili, mana. Rabbi Yehuda says you have to give a mana, which is 100 zuz. So, you know, big disparity in terms of the two opinions, either four zuz or 100 zuz. Sitro, let's say you slap someone on the face, no sin lo ma'atayim zuz. So you have to pay 200 zuz in a boshet payment. Lachar yado, what if it's like a backhanded slap, which is a more embarrassment? Nosin lo arba mil zuz. So that's 400 zuz payment of boshet. Tserem ba'ozno. Let's say you pulled or you nicked somebody's ear. Talash bisaro, you pulled their hair. Rakak vihigia bo roko, or you spit on them and the spit actually reaches them. And this thing reaches their body. Rashi says reaches their flesh. I think it was right. Yeah, Rashi brings that. Not if it hits them on their clothes, it's a little bit different. I'm not sure if there's a lower boshet payment or no boshet payment, but your spit actually gets onto their body. Hever taliso, or you remove their outer garment. So again, there'd be higher boshet payment if they were naked. But let's say you just take off their outer garment and now they're sitting in public in their undergarments. Parosh ha'isha b'shuk, or if you remove a woman's head covering in the shuk in public. In all these cases, nosin lo arba meo zuz. So all of them have a 400 zuz boshet payment. Amud beis, zeh haklal hakol lefi kvodo. What is the general principle? Everything depends on the kavod of the person. And we look in Rashi. Rashi says, b'gmar b'farish kulahi ochuma. Because originally we were giving set amounts for boshet, and then we come up with this concept of everything depends on the kavod. So the question is, what we'll see later in the Gemara, which way is it, right? Are these minimum amounts, but if you have someone that is more kavodic, it's higher, or is this the maximum amount of this is for someone that is a covetous person? But if you have someone who has a lesser stature, then these amounts can potentially be dropped down. So we'll see that. We'll see that later in the Gemara, possibly tomorrow, not today. I can only tell you not today. Maybe tomorrow. Amar Rabbi Kiva. So Rabbi Kiva comes along and says to this opinion: Afilu aniim shev Yisrael rona sam kiilu heim bnei Chorin shiardu b'nechseim sheim bnei Avram Yitzchak v'Yaakov. And we had this concept a couple days ago. Rabbi Kiva says even if you have an ani, we don't treat him just as an ani for boshes payments for kavod, but rather we view him as if it was somebody who was once a wealthy person of stature and has now fallen from grace, which would have a higher level of boshet than somebody who never had this level of stature. And he says, because we're all descendants of Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov, all originally came from nobility. And now Gemara tells a story to highlight one of these points. Ma'aseh be'echad, we had one person, Shepar Rosh Ha'isha B'shuk, he removed a woman's head covering in the marketplace, Basel Flin Rabbi Akiva, and he came in front of Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Akiva said, in line with our Mishnah, okay, you have to give this woman, you have to pay her 400 zuz as a boshet payment. Amar lo, Rabbi tein li zman, v'nasin lo zman. So the litigant, the damager, or in this case, the person who pulled off the woman's head, said, Rabbi, I need a few days. Let me come up with the money. It's a lot of money. Let me come up with it. And Rabbi Akiva said, fine, you have a couple days to come up with the money. And what do you do in the interim? Shamra omedes al pesach chatzera. He went ahead and waited by the courtyard of where this woman lived. And he took a jug full of an iser of oil, broke it right in front of this woman while she was coming out of the chatzor, while she came out of the chatzor into the public domain. And now there was oil sitting there on the floor. Gil says, Rosha, the woman uncovered her head, and she started anointing her hair with the oil. So, Hamid Allah Adim, this guy, was smart. He made sure to have Adim set up there to witness this whole account. Ubalafnei Rabbi Kiva, he came back to Rabbi Kiva, and he Amar Lei, Lezu Ani Nosei and Dal Mi Azuz. This is the person, this woman, you want me to pay 400 Zuz Boshet payment? Look, she easily uncovers her own hair just to anoint it with oil. You want me to pay her 400 Zuz? Amar Lei, Rabbi Kiva said back, no, Lo Amar Klum. This incident that you prepare doesn't hold any water. Why hachova ba'atzmo afa pisha eno rishoy pater? Because Eve, if you go ahead and you damage yourself, so you embarrass yourself, this woman embarrassing herself by uncovering her hair, it's true, she's not supposed to do it, but she would still be pater from paying her own boshet payment. However, achirim shechavu bochayavim, but just because this person lowers their own stature by doing it doesn't mean that others wouldn't still have to pay that same boshet payment. The akotet niyato and nityasav, and a related case, if somebody goes ahead and cuts down their own saplings, there were fruit tree saplings where the Torah tells you you're not allowed to cut down fruit trees. Someone else goes ahead and cuts down these somebody, an owner of the saplings, goes ahead and cuts down the saplings. Af pish enu rishoy pater. They don't obviously owe anything to themselves, but they're not allowed to do it. But acherim chayavin. But in that same case, if someone else would do it, even though the owner does it himself, the third party would still be chayav. Okay, so Gemara says, Ibaylu, manatsuri tanan o manamadina tanan. So first case of the Mishnah that we had was a tokela chavero. Tanakama said you give a sela, which was four zuz. And Rabbi Huda says in the name of Rabbi Yossi Aglidi said a mana, which I said before was 100 zuz. We'll see that there are two ways of understanding what a mana is. So is it a mana tsuri? Or is it a mana medina? Mana tsuri, if you look in the Rashi, is chafei slaim or kufzas. That's that was what I had said. It's 25 slaim or it's 100 zuz. A mana medina is shminis mana tsuri. It's only 1/8 of that. So I guess it's 12 and a half zuz. So 12 and a half zuz. So question is, when we know that the Tanakhama said a sela, it's four zuz. So we're trying to figure out how different is Rabbi Yehuda's payment of a mana versus the Tanakhama. So is it 100 zuz, the mana tsuri, or is it 12 and a half zuz, the mana medina, which is much closer to the four? So Tashma, we bring a proof from a brisa that hu gavra de taka lelachavre, someone had hit or made a noise in somebody's ear. Also the comment of Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, Amarle came in front of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, and Rabbi Yehuda Anasi said, Ha'ana, ha Rabbi Yossi Haglili, I am here, and this is Rabbi Yossi Haglili. Havle manatsuri, give this person who you damaged a manatsuri for bosha payment, shmamina, manatsuri tanan shmamina. So very clear that Rabbi Yossi Aglili's opinion is, a mana in this case is a manatsuri, which is 100 zuz. So now Gemara wants to know though, my ha'ana ha Rabbi Yossi Aglili, there's a strange statement that Rabbi Yehuda Anasi said. Why was he saying to the litigant, I am here, this is Rabbi Yossi Aglili, pay the man his money. So, you know, what was Rabbi Yehuda Anasi saying? So, Ilei Malchikamar, if we would want to try to understand this in the simple context, that this is what Rabbi Yehuda Anasi was saying to the person, Ha'ana, I am here, Dechazisach, and I saw you damage this person in his ear, V'ha Rabbi Yossi Aglili, and this is Rabbi Yossi Aglili, De'amar Manatsuri, and whose opinion is that you pay Manatsuri versus Sela, the four Zuz of the Tanakhama. So, Zil Havli Manatsuri. So, well, maybe we'll say that's what he was saying. I saw you do it, so I'm the aide. I witnessed this, and I'm now judging that you have to pay a bosha payment. And this is Rabbi Yossi Aglili sitting next to me, who holds that the payment is a mana or a mana tsuri. So lemeimra, then we learned the aid nasadayin. Then it seems that as though Rabbi Yehuda Anasi is holding that the witness can also be the judge because he both witnessed the act and he's now judging the matter that you owe that this person owes 100 zuz. But we learned in Braisa. Sanhedrin Shirahu Echad Shaharagas HaNefesh. Let's say the whole Sanhedrin saw somebody commit murder. Miktsasa Naasu Edim. Miktsasa Naasu Dayanim. We'll split them in half. Half of them will be the Edim. Half of them will be the Dayanim. Divrei Rabbi Tarfon. That's what Rabbi Tarfon says. Right? So because we don't have this, we don't want to have the same people being a Dayan and an Ed, so we split them in half. Half are Dayanim, half are Edim. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Kulam Edim. No, Rabbi Akiva says, all the Sanhedrin are Edim. And now the difference between Rabbi Tarfon is that he's saying not only are they all Edim, but they all need to be Edim. Meaning, if somebody witnesses something, they can't say, I'm not going to testify, so I'll be a Dayan. If you witness it as an aid, that's it. You can no longer be a Dayan, even if you're not all testifying. So the whole Sanhedrin is disqualified of being a Dayan in this case, because they are all Edim. Vein aid, not a Dayan, like we said before. But in any event, if we look at the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon, still, Ad kan lokal Rabbi Tarfon, elo de miktsasa na'asu edim, umiktsasa na'asu dayanim. Rabbi Tarfon's remedy was split the Sanhedrin in half, and half, he just didn't hold like Rabbi Akiva that automatically by witnessing something you're disqualified by being a dayan. He's just saying if they would actually go ahead and testify, that would be a problem. So split them up. Half will be edim, half will be dayanim, and they'll be able to judge this case. Elo de miktsasa, aval ed nasa dayan lo kamar. However, both Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon did not ascribe to the situation where someone can actually give testimony and be the dayan all in the same case, which is what Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi would have been doing. He said, I witnessed you knock this guy in the ear, and I'm now judging that you owe him 100 mana. So what exactly was Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi saying to this person with that interesting lashon that he used? So two answers. Kitanya hahi kigon shiro belaila delolumevad dina nenu. So first answer is no. The case of Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Kiva is different than our case. That is a case where they witnessed the murder at night. Let's see this in Rashi. Shirah and Balayla, it's about five lines up where Rashi is narrow. Ulamacharas, so the witness did at night, and you can, you know, Sanhedrin, they cannot judge cases at night. So Ulamacharas, kishabon ladun, ain danin. However, since they witnessed it at night, the next day we're not going to allow the same Sanhedrin to be a dayan and to be an aid and a dayan in the same case. Ela, right? Ain danin ela al pi shmua. Therefore, they need to have edus, actual testimony. Lefichach tzarklim etzasim lahayit v'main sham ela gimel tzarkl hoshiv achirim nulahay b'fneim avaro b'yom. However, if let's say it was a case where Sanhedrin saw the murder take place during the day, osim al piharei'ya, then they can immediately, while it's fresh in their minds, go ahead and judge the case al piharei'ya, and in essence be an aid and a dayan. However, you can't, once you have that lapse in time and it's not an immediate judgment right at the time of seeing it, then you need actual third party aidus, and you can't have an aid acting as a dayan as well. And in this case, we can align Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi with the case of Rabbi Tarfon, where Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi saw the case, presumably that the case that he saw, the Taka case, was during the day. So he said, I see you doing the damage, and right away you have to pay. That was answer number one. Answer number two, V'yibayseima, hachi kamalei. This is really what Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was saying to the person. Ha'ana, I am Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, the sphere like Rabbi Yossi Aglili, and I hold Rabbi Yossi Aglili, who hold the Amar Manatsuri, who holds you owe 100 zuz, which is a Manatsuri. Vaha, and then, which wasn't stated in his opinion, but he's then saying, Vaha Sadi de Masader Bey, Zil Havli Manatsuri. And here are the witnesses that saw the account, and just a regular case. All right, so now that we brought up the concept of Eidah Sadayim, we're going to delve into it just a drop deeper. Rabbi Akiva, does Rabbi Akiva really hold, like we said in the Braisa, Rabbi Akiva, the aid nasa dayan, does Rabbi Akiva really hold that an aid cannot become a dayan? Vatanya, we learned in the Braisa. Vika ish esrei eu be'evin o be'egrov. We know the case of the Torah that's talking about murder says the person hits with an evan, with a stone, or with a fist. So Shimon HaTemani Omer, Ma'egrov miyuchad shemasher le'eda ule'edim. Just like a fist, something that's attached to someone's body, is specific that it can be turned over to the edim and to the dayanim. Everybody can see the evidence of what delivered the blow. So afkol shemasher le'eda ule'edim. It must be, it has to, you can only adjudicate a case if the murder weapon is delivered there and present in Beisdin. This comes to exclude a case where the Edim, let's say, did witness the murder weapon, but now it's lost and then they don't have it anymore and it can't be brought into court. So Amar Lah Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says, and the reason being, the reason Rashi brings down, the reason is so that way we can look and determine, is this an item that could deliver sufficient blow to kill somebody? Because if it can't, then we'll say that the person died because of his own weaknesses and wouldn't be, and the chovah would not be chayiv misa. So Amar Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says back to Shimon HaTemani, v'chi mipnei beizdin hiko shiyodin kama hiko v'alma hiko. Did this event actually happen within beizdin, so that beizdin knows all the different parameters of the hit, that he knows how hard he was hit or where exactly he was hit? The Imal Shoko, Al Tzipor Nefesh, whether it was on his thigh or on his the cartilage of the heart, meaning again a place that's more sensitive. The Ode, Harishidachas Chaver Omero Shagag, or let's say you have a case where someone pushed someone off a roof, Omero Shapiro, or off a tower. Umeis, Bezin Holchan Etzel Bira, Obira Holechas Etzel Bezin. Did Bezin have to actually go and see the height of this tower or of this cliff? Va'odim nafla chozer bona, or let's say happened to be the tower fell down. Are we going to rebuild it to reconstruct the whole case? Really, we you know, basically what he's saying is, what's happening? Bezin always has to rely on testimony. The people, the Eidim who saw it, as long as the Eidim saw the murder weapon, that should be sufficient because they're always relying on the account of the Eidim. They're not going to recreate the entire scene in Bezin. Ella, what does Rabbi Akiva learn then? Ella, ma egrov. What does it mean that the pasuk says ve'evan o be'egrov, or a fist? Why does it teach that? What's the limud? Ma egrov miyuchad shu moser le'edim. Of course, shu moser le'edim. It has to be that the edim had the murder weapon, so the edim were able to evaluate whether the weapon had sufficient, would be able to deliver sufficient blow. That's if the murder weapon, let's say the killer gets rid of the murder weapon right away and the Edom never get a chance to examine it, that would be a case where the Beis Din would not be able to be mechayev the person of Misa. So Katani Misa, in any event, Amar lo Rabbi Akiva, right, what he's saying, and still, what we saw through the story was Rabbi Akiva still said, did they see how hard he hit him, where he hit him? It seems from Rabbi Akiva's words, though, that had Beis Din seen this action, they would actually be able to testify, right? From the fact that he said, did Beis Din see to be able to make these determinations? So what's mashma from that is, had they seen, they would be able to. And it looks like then, Eid Nasadayan. So now the answer, L'dvarav, the Rabbi Shimon, Timani Kamar, V'leilo Sfir, like, no. What Rabbi Akiva was just saying, he was just coming to exclude the opinion of Rabbi Shimon HaTimani. But really, he held Eid Lo Nasadayan, like we said earlier. All right, we'll stop here.